The gentleman in seat 2D was in medical distress when he boarded. The flight attendant is sure of it. He was the first on the plane, leading the rush of premium club members. She noticed he was already having trouble, stumbling in the narrow aisle, sweat visible on his face. He shoved his overnight bag into her arms to stow for him and asked for a drink right away, a vodka, neat. She is used to this kind of treatment from business class passengers, especially on this hop from JFK to Reagan National, which is often full of VIPs, senators, and businessmen. He looks to her like a politician, the worst of all. She knows better than to argue with him. She brings him a glass of water, too, even though he didn't ask for it, in case he needs to cool off or take medication. He's not in great shape, 300 pounds easy, squeezed into a suit at least two sizes too small. His face is pale, but there's a deep flush creeping up from under his collar. He grumbles to himself throughout the boarding process, but is otherwise quiet. His cell phone is clutched in one hand as the rest of the passengers squeeze by, his face turned to the tiny window, shunning any possibility of contact. He pays no attention through the safety demonstration, but then again, no one does anymore, and the flight attendant stopped taking offense long ago. As the plane taxis onto the runway, she checks the manifest. His name is Yaromir Popov, and he came to JFK via an Aeroflot flight from Heathrow. A Russian businessman, then. No sooner has the Airbus A330 lifted into the night sky than the Russian starts having problems. From the jump seat in the galley, the flight attendant sees his face has turned bright pink and that he's having difficulty breathing. Could he be choking on something? He hasn't pressed the call button, so it might just be garden variety anxiety. Takeoffs are the worst for many passengers. She counts the minutes until the fasten seatbelt signs go off. The flight to Washington, D.C. will be quick. Because the plane is barely one-third full, the airline cut back on flight attendants. Tonight, it's just her and another woman. The bare minimum. Still, there's plenty for them to take care of, and she doesn't think about Popov again until it's time to take drink orders. By then, he's gotten worse. He is shaking in his seat and on the verge of convulsions. His eyes bulge, and his bright red face is shiny from sweat. She is glad the cabin is dark and the plane practically empty. She doesn't want to alarm the rest of the passengers. Most have their heads down anyway, trying to catch a quick nap on the 90-minute trip. She leans over him, bringing her face close to his so she can check for the smell of alcohol. "Are you okay, sir? Is there something I can do for you?" He opens his mouth, but no words come out, only a gurgling, choking noise. Something seriously wrong. Her pulse immediately quickens. She's never had to give emergency medical aid on a plane, and she frantically tries to recall what she's supposed to do next. Loosen his tie, check his airway for obstructions, signal for the other flight attendant to come help her. Bubbles form in the saliva that coats his lips like a rabid dog. She darts into the galley for another plastic cup of water, which he gulps down greedily, but it does nothing to help him to speak. The shaking increases. It is like he is riding his own personal wave of turbulence. There is a strangled look of panic in his eyes. He knows something is very wrong, but stubbornly keeps trying to speak as though he is determined to give a message to her. Spooked, she leaps to her feet and sprints for the cockpit. She knocks on the door and waits for the click of the lock as it disengages before popping her head in. The pilot and co-pilot look up at her at the same time without even a hint of curiosity as to why she needs to see them. Maybe they think she is bringing coffee. "We've got a passenger in medical distress. In business class," she adds, knowing that sometimes makes a difference. A look of annoyance flits across the pilot's face. "How bad is he?"
"I don't know. He seems pretty bad."
The pilot twists in his seat to look directly at her, like this is her fault. "Do we need to turn back?" "We're almost over Trenton," the co-pilot says, looking at the instruments. "Even if we turn around, we'd have to circle at JFK for an hour before we could land. It's only another 40 minutes to D.C. We can ask for priority landing and for a medical team to be waiting at the gate." She can tell by the glassy look in the pilot's eyes that his mind is made up. "Yeah, sure, that's what we'll do. You," he turns to the flight attendant, not having bothered to remember her name, "keep him as comfortable as possible. See if he can give you anything we can radio on ahead to Washington, the name of a doctor, what medications he's on, anything." She hesitates.
Could you see if there's a doctor on the flight? Both pilot and co-pilot exchange glances. It's the kind of thing they hate to do. It makes the passengers nervous. Ask over the intercom if there's a doctor on the plane, and some passengers immediately assume that Ebola has broken out and start freaking out. But the pilot gives a quick nod.